Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I've spent my entire life since March joining this community, this world, the world of Bravo. You know, I started with The Real Housewives of New York, and then I spent my summer with The Women of Beverly Hills, and then, of course, spent the last, you know, 2 months in Potomac. Right. I finally convinced you to join me on The Real Housewives of Potomac. Dylan, we need to talk.
I know. It was like a Stockholm Syndrome situation, is what I'll say, because I would watch, I would come in and out of the room whenever the reunions were on.
Oh, right, right. I feel like, yeah.
Sucked in. I used to sort of be like, that was my blind spot when it came to like queer culture, but The Real Housewives of Potomac, or RHOP, as I like to call it, like IHOP. It is art. It's high art. It is like the housewives are beautiful. They are brilliant. They are so authentic. It's amazing. I finally understand the housewife fever that people have had.
It's great. And I think it's a good one to like, if you're going to pick one, I think it's good because the drama on it feels authentic to them. Like it actually feels like it's happening. And unlike some of the other ones, they do break the fourth wall a lot, and they'll show like just this past Sunday. I know you're not fully caught up on season 5 yet, but like at one point, like Michael Darby, like he has his Denise Richards Bravo, Bravo, fucking Bravo moment, and he's like, "Can we cut the cameras for a second?" And the producer literally comes over. But it is so good. I am so glad you're obsessed with it. Wait, you know that thing where people are doing that Spotify like Receipt-ify thing where they can like pick their top songs of the last month? I am so humiliated, but I have to share the fifth song on that list of my most listened to Spotify songs from last month is Ashley Darby's song,
Coffee
and Love, which is humiliating. And it's a bad song.
To quote our friend Matt James, she didn't have to make music.
She didn't have to, but housewives like to.
They all really do. You know, I'll say it's Karen Huger is everything. I love Monique Samuels. Giselle is icon. I mean, it's just such a good show. Anyone who's looking for something to just like let loose, unplug for a little bit, The Real Housewives of Potomac, it's incredible.
It's the one.
It'll make you understand the housewives fever that goes on.
It's so good.
You know, speaking of people who are maybe in one pocket of entertainment, and then when something happens, they release a single. That's very popular among Rue girls to release a single, maybe upon elimination or after the season's over. And our guest today actually falls into that category.
Tell me why, Dylan. Someone who has released
an iconic single. Well, I'm going to bring the guest in.
Oh my God. Right? As you do, I'm like sipping my coffee and I have a straw on it. And I do feel like a housewife at a reunion who's like,
because they don't want to mess up their lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Salam. Our guest today is the Persian princess of drag and was one of the last queens standing on RuPaul's Drag Race season 12. This Canadian-born queen, in addition to winning 3 mini challenges and all of our hearts, was also officially dubbed the trade of the season, serving charisma, uniqueness, nerd, and talent on this massive platform. Our guest brought memorable runways, including being the first queen to ever wear a Muslim-inspired look with a caftan and hijab on the runway, delivered iconic lip sync for your life moments, such as Firework, and a spot on Lisa Rinna impersonation in the Snatch Game. Her single, You Wish, is available now, and she is the host of the weekly chat show with our dear friend Michael Hull called Good Morning Tonight. She continues to inspire and take the world by storm right from Hell's Kitchen. She's Miss Cox, if you're naughty, just like her girls, Laverne, Deb, and Courtney. Please welcome to Drama, Jackie Cox.
Hi. Oh my goodness, what an intro. Did you send me that in an email? I'm gonna put that on my website. It's so good.
Someone has too much fun writing these.
Oh my God, we love you so much, and we're so excited to have you on the pod.
Oh my God, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be on the pod.
Of course.
I can speak quietly into the microphone because we're on a pod.
Yeah. It's very NPR. That's right.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
I was very excited by your convo about the housewives.
Yes.
Can we just jump right in and talk about that for like mm-hmm. a couple minutes?
Of course. Because,
you know, that always gets me going.
Absolutely.
Did you guys, and again, this just happened last night, but it was such a good... Do you know those like clip shows they air at the end of every season called The Secrets Revealed?
Secrets Revealed. Yes.
It's honestly what it is. It's like B and C storylines that they were not interesting enough and like parties where nothing happened. So like, it's like, hey, we have this extra footage that we spent, you know, all this money on. Mm-hmm. Let's just throw it into this clip package. And it was mostly that, I will say. Like, Sutton's birthday party obviously is not made for TV moments. It was just Sutton literally sitting in a bird cage and like acting ridiculous. That was literally what her birthday party was. But they did show more of the Bravo, Bravo, effing Bravo. I don't know if there's kids listening. Effing Bravo moment. And it was such... I live for the breaking of the fourth wall on The Housewives. Mm. And when the producer comes in and they show the producer coming in, because Denise is like yelling for a producer to come talk to her. And all the girls, it's funny because she's looking around at the cameras. It's very like Truman Show. And like all the other housewives are not. All the other housewives are just looking at each other and at her because they're like, we're professionals from Beverly Hills who are all actresses in our own right. Uh-huh. We know how to not break the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. And Denise keeps literally, and Kyle is like zeroed in and focused on Denise Richards' face.
Oh.
And Denise keeps looking around. And then two things happen. One, Erica, almost as if she's like, no one will catch me. She just goes, Denise. And she like puts her hand like quietly on Denise's leg and like gives her like a, girl, we're on stage kind of a moment. And then the producer comes in from the back. The one she's been calling from is probably like in a trailer or like in a van outside mm-hmm. of this restaurant. Comes in and just starts yelling. And he says, Denise, back to reality.
Oh, that is iconic. Oh, how thrilling.
I was so gagged. You can't see because it's a podcast, but I just like open mouth gay gasp because I was so gagged. I was like, A, I just love that they showed that. And B, I loved the commitment by the rest of the cast and the producers. And I will say this. As you know, in addition to You Wish, I just dropped my newest hit single, Gaslighter.
Yes, this is recent.
This is really recent.
A parody of Gaslighter by the Dixie Chicks, mm-hmm. as sung in my imagination by Lisa Rinna. And I think what actually what Lisa Rinna is mad about this season is that Denise Richards does not take the rules of engagement of Beverly Hills and the seriousness of that fourth wall the same way that Lisa does. And yeah. Lisa's like, no, I am here to be Lisa Rinna on this TV show. I will not break the fourth wall. I will not call for a producer if a scene isn't going my way. I am in this moment as this character of Lisa Rinna that I portray on television.
Yes.
And Denise was not doing that. Denise was like, no, I don't like the way this scene is going. I'm going to call for a producer to change what's happening.
Yeah.
And so that was such an interesting study for me in the way that, you know, I think, like you were saying, Potomac is much more, I think, real because they aren't all actresses. Mm-hmm. But for Beverly Hills, it's about those, like, that reality under, like, a fabricated circumstance. But the women of Beverly Hills are committed to it. Like, they're like, nope, we're going to pretend that all these cameras aren't here. Mm-hmm. And we're going to really go into this.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a long tangent.
No, I need to watch the clip show.
That's interesting because of them, they did have fourth wall breaking moments on Beverly Hills this season. I'm thinking of the one in Rome when Denise, like, she's like being nice all day, whatever. I think they're at like a pizza parlor or something. And then she like lets the women have it and leaves. And then they showed the producer being like, Denise, you've got to go back in. You've got to go back in. I'm surprised they showed that and not the moment where, I mean, I didn't see the clip from last night, but not the moment where the producer's like, Denise, back to reality.
Right, back to reality. Which is so funny because it works on so many levels. Mm-hmm. You're like, which reality are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening anymore? It's like, it boggles the mind. That moment, and then the moment, I think it's the last party where Denise doesn't show up, and there's Garcelle waiting in the car for Denise, and Garcelle's like, well, I guess Denise isn't showing up. And then you see the producer coming and talking to Garcelle saying, like, well, how does that make you feel? Uh-huh. And I'm like, interesting they showed that, because, like,
as someone who's been on reality TV, like, I know that those kind of conversations happen, but then usually then it's on you, the person, to be like, oh, yes, okay, so now that I this is how I feel, now I have to verbalize how I feel.
Yeah.
That's the unreal part of reality TV, is we all feel those things that are happening on reality television. Like, what's different about reality TV is you have to verbalize those things,
right?
Because that's your A, that's your job, and B, if you don't, the audience won't necessarily understand what's happening. So you have to verbalize things that in real life, maybe you would just sit there and be annoyed quietly. Mm-hmm. But in reality TV, you have to be like, I'm annoyed, and have to say it.
It's like if you're asked a question and you just need to sort of like reword the question in your answer, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But we're not here to talk about reality TV only. I've taken over this podcast.
We can talk about it this whole time.
We love it. I need to ask. Now, I know you did Rinna on Snatch Game, so I know you have an appreciation and love for her. And I also love Lisa Rinna. But when it comes down to the end of this Beverly Hills season, I have to admit, I kind of had it with Rinna. I have to say, I felt like she was being mean in like a, she was making herself the villain kind of way, but she felt like the fans would be on her side. And I just feel like, I don't really think she is that mean of a person. I think she just really committed to playing this role of, I am a truth teller. I want to get to the truth and I want Denise to spill the truth. And I think that having seen the whole season now, because I was team Denise for most of the season, I have to say, even though I love them all, you know, actually I was team Dorit, but which was a whole.
Wait, I have a theory. I have a theory, and I shared this in my private, very exclusive Real Housewives gay group chat that I'm in. But this is a hot tea that I'm breaking right now. I bet Dorit gets sent her diamond next year. I have a feeling.
I think
she's kind of like built herself up in this franchise into being kind of like what the franchise is. She's arguably one of the most glamorous. She is able to be in the storylines without being too messy, unlike her first season where she was very messy.
I know.
And she's kind of like become lovable in a way, which I had never anticipated with three. But now when I watch her, I'm like, she's kind of fun. She's like, I feel like she gets sent her diamond. Do you have any predictions for next season's sent her diamond?
I just, as I'm only a Potomac person, but I do know about this Denise Richards drama from, you know, the internet. But I do, only thing I know about Dorit, is she the one with the Buca di Beppo storyline?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's all, Jackie, I can really say.
I think she will get it. You're right. I think she'll get it because I don't think Kyle brings enough to the show at this point that she seems, I mean, they sort of, I think they knew that this season, so that's why they made her the narrator, with of course, the iconic end of the premiere moment where they're like at Kyle by Shahidi fashion show, and then she's like, I'm so happy I cried the whole time, and then it freeze frames, and she's like, we were all so happy that day.
I know, it's so, it was like so much. Speaking of drama podcast, this is a drama.
That's literally drama. I think Dorit gets center diamond.
I think so too. But back to your question about whose team am I on, or how do I feel?
How do you feel?
So I think actually last night's episode helped illuminate Rinna's motivation for me, in that I really do think that it wasn't really about Brandy. It was more about the fact that Denise wasn't playing by the rules of the game. And I think for someone like Lisa Rinna, Lisa Rinna and Kyle, and probably Dorit, the three of them really take the franchise and their role in it so seriously. And, you know, and that even goes back to how everything happened with Lisa Vanderpump, is they were like, no, you're not playing by the same set of rules that we are. And I think that it's in a different way with Denise, whereas Vanderpump was trying to be too producing of the show.
Yeah.
Denise was trying to be like, no, well, producing in a different way. Denise was trying to produce the show from a way of like, well, if things aren't going my way, I'll just tell the producers that I'm not going to film. Whereas Vanderpump would do all these like behind the scenes machinations to get things to happen in a way. So I think that that's kind of important to the three of them. And I think what they hold on to in this franchise. So I think that's where I think Lisa Rinna's animosity comes from, in terms of her personal place. And then I do think, you know, she's a daytime television star. She knows how to like play up her own emotions for the moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh gosh. To be honest, like, I don't know what happened between Brandy and Denise, and it's like none of my business. Like, I'm not in Denise's marriage. I wouldn't mind being a guest star in a three-way in their marriage. However, I don't know. Aaron makes me nervous, but if he's not talking, then maybe.
I know. He got a little scary for me.
A little scary. Like, first with, like, the big intimidating stuff he'd do with the women, and then with the, like, crystal talk, I was like,
oh, I saw a clip of that. Well, him and Denise, at one point, they were like, we don't know who's listening. Like, they were convinced that someone was, like, on their trail. It was so odd, but iconic as hell. I mean, I truly get so much from these women. I really do. They're iconic. Do you think Erika Jayne will be back?
I think they need her back. So whether or not she does or doesn't, because I think Erika provides a nice counter to the women in the sense that she's the way that she kind of jumps in is like she gets fiery in such a cool way that it helps kind of break up their arguments. And I would counter the way that Erika's energy is very much like the, if you guys watched New York this season, the much needed energy that Leah brought this season is like, because when it's all kind of like fiery hotheads yelling, it's really hard as a viewer to like watch because you can't like breathe. It's just like everyone's operating at a level 10. And Erika always jumps into the argument with like a, well, here's my point of view. And like, her kind of like dry low voice.
And like Connor does an impression.
You kind of need that, right? So I think they need Erika in this show. And she's so glamorous. Like that's like half the reason I watch Beverly Hills is it's like it's the most aspirational in the sense that these women are really big celebrities living in the most fabulous town in the country. Like, and these are their lives. Like, this is so beyond my reality, right?
It's
did
awesome.
Did you see Erika in Chicago by any chance?
I'm very sad. I did not.
I know. We
did not
either.
See. And that whole scene where they're like, you know, that they like literally like flew in for an hour to like prance around Times Square is like two blocks from my apartment. I was so sad that I wasn't just hanging out there to like visit Erika and her puffer coat.
Oh my God, Jackie, I, this is a confession. I cried watching that scene, but not because I was like that thrilled for Erika, but I was just like seeing Times Square in a, like in moments before the world changed forever and seeing her like fulfilling her dream and there's the women, they're so happy. They're like hugging. I don't know. It just felt very, it was like too close to reality of like what we just left that I was like, oh my God, I miss New York. I miss that. I'm sad I didn't see Erika Jayne. Like I wish life was some semblance of the normalcy we had before. But anyway, drama.
But like, do you think, and this would be like a dream, like if Rinna, do you think Rinna has Velma in her?
I do.
She strikes me as more of a Velma than a Roxy.
So do we, can we appeal to the gay gods / producers of Chicago to make this happen for us? Rinna and Erika?
Oh my God. That would be legendary.
And Luann was rumored to go in, but I always thought it was going to be his mama, Morton.
I would not recommend casting Luann as Roxy or Velma.
Right. I think she could do Mama.
She could
She's got those
Mama.
Grovelly low notes.
I mean, that would also be epic if it was just like an All Housewives cast. Yeah. You throw Harry Hamlin back as Billy Flynn.
That would be great. Oh my God. Luann. I saw a tweet that was like, Luann is the Florence Foster Jenkins of the world, where like, she's convinced she's this amazing singer and everyone around her.
Right. She
like,
believes it so hard. And Luann is lovely. I have met the Countess a couple of times. And she is lovely. She had a bunch of us queens do kind of the Watch What Happens Live premiere of Giovanni.
Very fun.
That was last year. Funny story. I'll tell you guys real quick. Here's some scoop drama.
Yeah, give it to us.
That was literally... the day of that shoot was the day I didn't get the call from Drag Race, but I got like a call from Drag Race.
Wow.
So it was like a very interesting day because I like this was like swimming in my head and I couldn't tell anyone about it. Mm-hmm. And then it was we were feeling Giovanni and they had like these like racks of Giovanni gowns for us each to try on. It was kind of like a gay dream, but literally we're in the Bravo studios and there's just like racks of Giovanni gowns and they're like, girls, pick one. And I was like, can I keep this? And they were like, no.
Now, were there you said there was other drag queens there too?
Yeah, so it was all New York queens. Okay. It was me, Paige Turner, Heidi Ho, Tina Burner, mm-hmm. Chelsea Piers.
Wow.
I want to say Brenda Darling was there as well.
We love Brenda Darling.
I'm like 80 99% sure that those were it was us.
Ah, love it.
But it was that whole moment in my life was such a blur, because then from that moment on, it was like, then the real call happened like shortly thereafter, yeah. And then it was like craziness.
Oh my God, your life changed forever.
It did.
Now I know you talked about Drag Race a lot throughout just the last, I mean, this has been a huge year for you, but what was like your origin story of drag? Like, because where did Jackie Cox come from? How did you decide the name?
Yeah. So it's Jackie Cox existed as a name and a character before me doing her in drag.
Okay.
So my bestie Blake and I in college, we went to UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television.
Wow.
And we kind of created. Jackie Cox was this character, and Blake really pioneered it, because Blake used to do this like voice. It was kind of like a precursor to like. Almost like a Miranda Sings type voice. Yeah, it was like, yeah. Hi, I'm Jackie Cox, and I'm the best singer in the world. And that was kind of like her voice.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
We would just like pretend to be this like kind of like Emperor Wears No Clothes, clueless musical theater diva who like thought she was the best.
Uh-huh.
And her name was Jackie Cox. And then I think Blake recorded a whole album as her one time. It was like, we were very silly in college. Like, I don't know what we were doing. And then... That was, you know, in the early aughts, and then cut to 2010 when I just moved to New York City. My upstairs neighbor at the time was producing a drag competition called So You Think You Can Drag. And
at New World Stages, like, right?
At New World Stages. Yeah. And he was like, hey, come do this competition. And I was like, oh, I've never done like drag before. He's like, no, you just did a production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch last year. And I was like, oh, that's true. He's like, so you can do this. And I was like, oh, but I don't have like a drag name or a persona or anything. And I was like, I got it. Jackie Cox. And like when I first started, like, so the first thing I ever did in drag was a lip sync to Out Tonight from Rent.
Love it. The Daphne Rubin Vega like, version or the Rosario Dawson version?
Daphne Rubin Vega.
Okay.
Was the Rent movie out in 2010? I guess
it was.
Yeah. I probably blocked it from my memory. And no, it's
like most people have.
There's a whole other tangent we can go about that right now, because there were some great choices and a lot of not so great ones. I did Out Tonight from Rent, and then afterwards they're like, oh, and we're gonna ask you a couple questions at the mic, and it was Paige Turner was hosting, and she was like, and I was like, hi, I'm Jackie. I was like talking in that silly voice, and I was like, then like, so it took me actually that whole competition to actually like come into my own a little bit in terms of like, oh wait, Jackie isn't like that character. She's like actually just a version of me. Mm-hmm. But like that will always exist in her, that kind of idea that she's this, you know, she's like, she's kind of like thinks she could do anything, which kind of helps me as the performer also believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love that.
So yeah, that's the story of where she came from. Very theater-based origin.
I know.
Yes. Speaking of theater-based origins, I'm wondering, you know, we ask all of our guests this question. This is the big one. We ask them about their Ring of Keys moment, that moment that they realized that, you know, entertainment, theater, pop culture, it was in you forever and you needed to be a part of it for the rest of your life. Do you feel like you had that moment of recognition?
I was thinking back to this, and I actually think my first, like, I have two, well... As a kid, like a little kid, like in elementary school, our class did a little like play in October one year. It was about like a ghost who was really sad and lonely because no one could see him until he figures out that he can put a sheet over himself and then people can see him. Mm. And I remember like... I don't even know what this play is. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know if it's real or if this is just a fever dream I'm having. But I remember the teacher, I must have been like 7 years old. The teacher like had us each like read parts of it. And then she was like, and you'll be the ghost. And I was like, what? She was like, well, I believed you the most when you seemed sad that no one could see you. And like, I didn't know how to take that because I was like, I thought to myself, well, I'm not a sad kid. But I guess I was a little bit of a lonely kid in my own way because I always... saw things differently than most other kids and like felt I operated around the world. And so I realized at that young age, mostly subconsciously, and I've like processed this later, that like theater gave me a way to kind of like express and process my emotions. Because I, you know, as a child of divorce, as like a very gay child, I learned how to kind of operate in secret, in the sense I learned how to like hide parts of my personality that would either make my parents upset or that would make other kids tease me. And theater gives you that way to like let that all out a little bit. And so that was probably like the moment emotionally that happened for me as a kid. And then that kind of developed as I started doing more little plays in school. And then I think like my mom, being a, you know, divorced mother, loved the Les Mis cast album and would play I Dreamed a Dream on like repeat.
Of course.
You know, very tragic. Oh my God. And if it wasn't that, it was like the Andrew Lloyd Webber collection. So that was kind of like my first like exposure to like big professional musical theater was like the musicals of Andrew Lloyd Webber, and seeing that. And then I think the first time I like, I'd probably say in middle school was the first time I saw West Side Story, the movie. And that's when I was like, whoa, people can do all of this. Like people can sing and dance and like traipse around New York City, which is a place I'd only ever heard of. And all of those things. And that was like the first big movie musical that made like a big impression on me as a kid. And then probably beyond that, you know, Disney, you know, I saw The Little Mermaid, I think was the first movie I saw in theaters. And then Beauty and the Beast, which was a year later, I made my parents take me to, between the two of them, they were already divorced at that point, 5 times to see that in theaters. I really thought I was Belle. I was like, well, I like to read. Yeah. She likes to read. I was just really into that.
I talked to the teapot,
sing all
too.
Of those songs. Yeah, exactly. I was a lonely little only child. So like that whole idea of like, you know, wanting a life that's different than yours, like all that kind of stuff. And I just really always identified with characters and heroines like that. So yeah, that was a very long-winded answer.
No.
But there it is. Those are my ring of keys moments.
I love that you can track that from the beginning and onwards. And, you know, I think there's something special about that story about the ghost too, that no one can see the ghost until the sheet is on. And there's a metaphor there for maybe costumes in theater or, you know, putting
or drag,
getting
into drag. Right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Drag,
yeah.
You know, I've heard that drag doesn't change who you are. It reveals who you are.
Oh.
Have you heard that?
I've heard it. Yeah. I've heard that one before.
That's such a sad, cute story, though, about the ghost.
It is. It's like the older I get, the like more poignant that story seems. And I think I've only told it like once or twice, but It's a funny origin story, and also points to the importance, if anyone in this podcast is listening, of keeping arts in our schools.
Absolutely.
So please keep arts in the schools. Tell your elected officials that that's important to you.
Yes. Be an arts hero.
Be an arts hero. We have to vote.
Be an arts hero.
Get rid of Betsy DeVos and...
Oh, God, please. Please.
Get rid of Trump.
Yeah.
Although it sounds like he's not interested in like accepting an election, even if he loses. Did you guys see that?
I did see that.
That may be too much drama for this podcast. Mm-hmm.
Literally.
But... I know. I talk about politics with friends all the time. I'd rather not right now, even though I know that that's like a place of privilege to not talk about it on a podcast. But
oh my God, we talk about it all day. We're on Twitter all day reading about it. Like it's not a part of our everyday lives. You know what I mean? So you're good, Dylan.
Okay, Jackie, I have another question. So you were talking about the other New York queens that you were in that Giovanni shoot with. What was like your, like before the pandemic, the pandemi Lovato, as Connor and I call it, before that, what was your like New York drag life? Like where would you perform? Connor and I were huge industry hardware and therapy fans. And I know that I believe therapy is closed now.
Yeah. It's so I started drag in 2010. Mm-hmm. And that was in New York. And the entire time I was doing drag up until I left to film Drag Race.
Okay.
I pursued a parallel career path in the retail industry. I was literally I think 4 months after I placed second in the first season, So You Think You Can Drag, which was crazy to me because I was like, I've never done this before, and then it went really well. And then like a couple months later, I was like, I took a big job offer in San Francisco, and I moved to San Francisco for a year and a half, and I kind of became a buyer for Gap, the clothing company.
Oh, cool.
And I worked in San Francisco, and then they had the opportunity for me to come back to New York. And as much as I love San Francisco, I felt like San Francisco is really a tech town, and while I appreciate technological advancements, I missed the theater community.
Sure.
And I missed kind of the drag aspect of the theater community. So San Francisco drag is amazing, and but I didn't feel like my drag fit in as well there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still doing drag like once a week, maybe twice a week in San Francisco, while I was working this corporate job. And also no one at the corporate job knew about it.
Wow.
It was very like Hannah Montana.
I know, that's a pilot. There's a pilot somewhere there for...
Totally a pilot. Ryan Murphy, I'm very grateful. I say that on every podcast. And so I moved back to New York, and then really started doing drag more here. And then it wasn't until actually I left Gap after working there since I was 18. So I worked there for 12 years when I was 30. I left Gap and got a job at a different retailer, Ross, a.k.a. Ross Dress for Less.
Yes.
And their offices are in Midtown. So it was suddenly my whole life was in Midtown. And I actually suddenly had a lot more time because I was never taking the subway. It took me 10 minutes to walk to work. And I had all this extra time. And also, to be honest, my job at Ross was a lot less demanding than my job at the Gap. So I had all this kind of free time. And the 2016 election happened, and I had all these feelings about it, and I'd been kind of thinking about doing my own big show. So up until that point, I'd only kind of been, I'd been a guest star in many other Queens shows, and a lot of Queens kind of grew to trust me as like a substitute host for a lot of their shows. I would sub for Paige Turner, I would sub for, I think I subbed for Sutton Seymour one time, I've subbed would come into different shows of different Queens and just kind of help them out or whatever they needed.
Because
I lived in Midtown and I'm very close to hardware, therapy, industry, all those bars. And so my first big thing I did in 2017, beginning of 2017, is I built the I Dream of Jackie show.
Yes.
Which was my way to comment on everything happening with the Trump administration and kind of like a fun story that had serious moments. But that from that moment on, then I kind of like really started pushing what I was doing in drag into a lot more of like the storytelling that I've kind of has become what I love the most about drag. And up until, you know, early 2019, when I was like, I've never auditioned for RuPaul before, but let's see what happens. And so I auditioned, and then I literally left my job. We had to fly out on a Monday, and my last day was a Friday of my job.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And then coming back from the show, you know, while we still had that time before the cast was announced, I like really dove into nightlife. I'd started doing a couple weekly things with therapy.
Yeah.
And then I would still kind of do my shows at the Laurie Beachman Theater. So I was really trying to like do drag like 2-3 or maybe even 4 times a week, you know, just to like rev up my muscles for like a big year of touring that didn't happen.
Oh, my God. You know what? It's so interesting you mention that, because we used to say that like every week.
Every week.
When the show was airing, we'd be like, God, this should be like the happiest, you know, 3-4 months, most exciting 3-4 months for these queens. They would be like, you know, working every night, traveling, you know, because even like being from Ohio, we'd, you know, there's like the one gay bar in Columbus, but every...
I'm coming. Columbus, I'm available.
Yes, you will.
They would have like every Rue girl there every week. Like they would just like book them. And seeing that from Ohio, it's like in New York, you know, I remember actually a week before, you know, COVID really, it was like March like 3rd or something, March 4th, or I don't know. It was like the Wednesday. We saw Jan at Industry on like a Wednesday night. And we were like, this is probably the last time we'll see her for a while. Like, you know, she's going to be like taking off, like touring or whatever, like not doing her regular gigs. And then like, sure enough, like, yeah, it was the last time we'd see her for a while because, you know, all live performances are shut down. That must have been devastating. Oh my God.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to lie that it wasn't.
Yeah.
I've been trying to use this time. You know, I think the first 3 months I was just like, well, honestly, just dealing with social media, which I would have had to do anyway, was more exhausting than I anticipated.
A full-time job. I think,
you know, we talked about the Housewives earlier, but like having like, you know, and it's probably only maybe 25% of what they get in terms of the just volume of social media kind of like input. And then you have to make all these decisions of like, what do I engage with? What do I not engage with? Like, how do I still, you know, keep whatever brand I think I am and or people perceive me to be from the show? Like, how do I keep that voice consistent across social media? And probably I'm one of, you know, because this is, I'm sitting here analyzing this in my own head as it's happening in real time. I don't know if the other queens think this way, but this is how I'm thinking. Like, I'm like, if what I post like really reflective of like who I am? Like, you know, I'm like always thinking that kind of stuff because like I want to be. You want, you know, when the cameras are off and you're just, it's just you and your social media, to still, you know, be someone. If they connected to me and my story on TV, I want them to still find that through me and my channels. So, you know, I always was second guessing everything I was posting, and, you know, and then as we moved into the summer and all of the really important, you know, stuff happening with Black Lives Matter, really, really thinking a lot about what I could do with my platform, you know, I just, so that was, that really occupied a lot of my mental energy. And maybe if I had been touring the world, it would have been a very different story. And I would have been like, whatever, I'm just, here's a photo of me backstage, click. And then like posted and not thought about it because I didn't have time to think, but I did think a lot because I was sitting at home a lot. And then I thought, as you know, we moved into the summer, I was like, wait, this isn't ending anytime soon. I'm going to be here in New York. Like, what can I do with my life? And so I did a couple things. One was work on this new talk show that I have with our friend Michael Hall. Because I wanted to, A, do something, and B, I wanted to really refine my skills as an interviewer and a host. And so this was a really fun way to do it. You know, Michael has really been working on the technical side of, like, building out these streaming shows, and he helped me a lot with my shows earlier on in the pandemic, and so we learned a lot together. And then, you know, like things like it's not a secret, but I'm not the best dancer in the world. It's certainly not the best at making dance moves seem sexy, according to Jamal Sims, but I've been working on it, and I'm taking dance every week, and
oh my gosh,
just trying to get better at me. And things like, that's kind of what I've been trying to, like, find as much positive as I can in this time where I'm not touring. We'll see what happens when this pandemic ends. I'm sure there will be tours available.
There will be.
Yes. You will be one of the first ones called for all of the group tours, and you'll be booked all across the world, honestly, because
I'm very available.
You know what? As you were talking, I was reminded of this idea that something Dylan and I talk about all the time, and they're sort of doing it now with Drag Race Vegas Review, but I think in like a more specific way. But wouldn't it be amazing to have, like, you know, VH1 Bravo style reality show, speaking of Housewives, in the style of Housewives, that follows like several, you know, drag queens, kings, like maybe like five or, you know, like typical like grouping of, you know, stars, cast members, but in New York, just navigating the drag scene of New York, and you see them doing their like daily jobs, you know, whatever they're doing, maybe working in retail, and then they're going to work at, you know, their show at wherever. Wouldn't that be awesome? And it's like, it's less specific, because I think with Vegas Review, like, they were like, okay, we're all doing this Vegas show together, and then we're going to, like, create drama around it. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of their supporting players were all in different states. So I think that's where that show didn't have as much, like, I would say, like, organic drama, because cast members had to come in and out, and it wasn't like they were all, like, experiencing all these things together. But anyway, it's still good. But I think where Housewives thrives is you do have all these, like, tertiary characters that come in and out, like, the husbands, the this, the that, the friends of.
Well, darling, I will tell you, I did play a tertiary character in such a television program. So it was called Shade Queens of NYC. And it came out, I want to say they filmed it in 2017.
With Marty Gold Cummings, right?
Yeah, Marty Gold Cummings, one of the producers of the show. And it was actually a lovely show.
Yeah.
The only flaw of the show was that they had to, so it got greenlit. And the network, this was on Fusion, they wanted it to air, like, it got greenlit in the summer, and they wanted the first episode out, like, September 1st. So it became a quick rush to production. And one of the storylines was the final / all-star season of So You Think You Can Drag, which Holly Boxsprings was competing against me. So I was like kind of a friend of, and I didn't have my own talking head, but I was a little, I was a tertiary character in that show. And then I steal the crown from Holly at the end of the season.
So you won the All-Stars. You won the All-Stars.
I won the All-Stars.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wait, what was this show called? How come I've never heard of it?
It's you would love it. It's called Shade, Queens of NYC. And they got renewed for a second season. And then Fusion was bought out by a different company. And then the new owners didn't proceed with it. I was really sad because I was like ready to come in, like, you know, this is the year I get my Apple, you know, like, yes, ready to do it. But instead, I decided to audition for RuPaul. So I guess everything worked out fine. But I will say it was kind of very ambitious because they were literally filming and editing and doing it all almost in real time. Wow. I was like, it was crazy. But they did it. They pulled it off. It's a lovely first season. There's an element that's kind of, I will say, artistic in that there's like dream lip syncs in every episode. Oh. So the episode's cut to like the queen's inner thoughts. And then the queen is in full drag delivering a lip sync. A little like mini music video happens every
episode.
That's
fun. Did you see Alyssa Edwards' Dancing Queen on Netflix? Because they do
that. I did
that.
Watch some of it.
They
yeah,
do that.
Yeah.
They do the because it was going to feature a drag number in every episode, and it was always very random, like towards the end of the episode or something like that. But I love that idea.
It is kind of a fun idea, and it kind of adds that like heightened reality element that you need from drag. But yeah, it's still a great idea, and I think whoever, you know, get someone to greenlight it should totally do it. Now, being a connoisseur of all of this stuff, I don't know if I'd ever sign up to be like a main player on a show like that. Unless I like, I don't know. I guess I'll never say never, but like,
yeah,
it's intimidating because just like on Drag Race, where at least in theory on Drag Race, you know, and we shouldn't talk too much about it, but I will say in theory that the drama of that show comes from the competition itself. Mm-hmm. Whereas on a non-competition based reality show, it all has to come from the interpersonal relationships of whoever the participants are, which I think the audience can always forgive someone for being cutthroat in a competition, but they may not always forgive someone for being cutthroat just between friends.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's something you're always, you have to think about before you sign up for a show like that. And I think that's kind of the deal with the devil that the housewives make. And some of them, you know, like Denise, want to cancel that deal after one season. Mm-hmm. I think what's funny about Denise is I think she probably got probably the tiniest amount of hate for the way on the first season she was so sexual and open about that and her husband's penis and all that kind of stuff. Like, but I think that whatever it was, something clearly got to her, and whether it was the fans or her manager or agent or someone who told her like, hey, you need to be like, if we want to cast you in another Hallmark movie, you're going to need to tone this down, honey. And so you could see it kind of like really affecting her in the way that she came into this season. Which is too bad because I loved first season Denise.
Me too. I actually liked season 9. Aside from the Lucy apple juicy of it all, I really did. I liked it. Denise came in like, in a way, it felt like Leah on this season of Roni. Like it was this, this shot of adrenaline that was this refreshing, like kind of open, you know, she's this very well-known celebrity, but she doesn't really do her hair. She just wears these jeans from American Eagle. You know what I mean? Like she, it was cool. It was cool. And I still like her, but I don't think she was meant for that environment.
Right. Because you have to kind of make the deal of like, hey, you have to realize whatever I'm dealing with in terms of social media backlash or whatever, you are like, well, it's worth it because I still have this platform that I can do other things with, you know? So I think that's, but it's a stressful thing. Like, I don't know if it would be exhausting. It was exhausting just dealing with social media in the only way I had to deal with it from my season. So I think, it's something that the every housewife has to make a decision for herself.
Absolutely.
You know, Jackie, you were talking about you were talking about how you were worried about how maybe people would perceive things or how you were handling yourself. I will say you came out from this season as probably one of the most classy, prepared, quirky, and smart queens, and it was one of the best seasons on record. So I think that you should...
A formal record. The most Emmy wins.
That's right.
I think Drag Race has ever won.
Ah, iconic.
I know, which you were part of that, so congrats. It's really amazing. And I think, you know, if All Stars is in the future down the line, like, I think that you'll only be... Maybe you'll snatch the crown like you did it So You Think You Can Drag. You never know.
You never know. You truly never know.
Connor, you were saying something and I cut you off.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just wanted to tell you, Jackie, that we love your talk show with Michael, Good Morning Tonight. Yes. I think it...
Oh, thanks.
I'm the kind of person who, like, has never really watched, you know, morning television, but I've always loved the concept of it. And also, maybe it's just in my head because I've also been watching The Morning Show on Apple TV Plus. So this idea of, like, these morning shows is really fresh in my head, but it's really great. And you guys, the songs that you guys do are so clever and well done. I also, this past week, you guys had Adam Perry on, and he is so hot. Oh my God. Girl.
We have gotten, there have been some very attractive people on our show, and more to come. You know, we've been, I love that Broadway Bears just gives us all an excuse to, like, really bring the hotties out. but, it's, I love doing the show. I did love the idea of a morning show. I mean, at some point in, like, the future when we can, like, do it from, like, either a real studio or a live space, like, I'd love to have even more, like daytime talk show segments. Like, let's actually, like, make Jackie cook something. Like, I don't think so silly. I think the idea of a morning show in the evening, it's just a silly idea. It's like very Lewis Carroll to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if Lewis Carroll was creating a drag talk show, this is what he would do. And so it was just like the silly idea I had. And then it kind of gives the show a nice kind of structure and a framework to kind of, like, work around and then also, like, be a parody of, like, you know, because I think one of the things that I love about morning talk shows is, like, the way they structure each hour as you go through the morning shows to get less and less serious.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Ending with, like, the 10 o'clock hour where I think the hosts are just drunk and just doing whatever they want. So we kind of start at that point, the 10 a.m. hour with our talk show where it's, like, you know, we're very casual. I love, like, joking about, you know, hard-hitting questions because, like, I don't think we've had one really hard-hitting question on the show. But it's fun to do, and I love that fans of drag can kind of connect with the theater community more, because I do think that within our world of Broadway, you know, and I say ours if I've ever been there, but I mean our world of, like, people who love theater and appreciate Broadway, you know, we celebrate those people so much, but I'd love to get more people to, like, have their eyes on them, and not just, like, the huge names that everyone knows, like, not just, like, the Idina Menzels of the world, but, like, everyone who's, like, that big in our eyes on Broadway, and I love giving a chance to spotlight them, and then everyone who makes it all happen, and especially right now when no one can do the thing that they love the most. Why not do it?
Well, it's great, and it's certainly a good way that you're putting your talents to work during this crazy time, and it's something to look forward to every Tuesday. So I say keep it up, and we'll always be tuning in and enjoying you and Michael on there with your mashups and songs.
Oh my God, the songs are so silly. And it's funny, you're like, they're so well produced. I'm like, Michael and I usually decide, like, the day before what we're doing, and it's, like, very hastily written, and then, you know, spoiler alert, we pre-record the vocals for everything. It's our voices, just you know, I will say the main reason is we've had Marty Thomas came and sang live on the show, and he is so good at, like, the engineering and the sound. Mm-hmm. It sounded beautiful, and I was like, I don't think I can do that. But maybe, you know, I'm gonna hopefully have a new studio space, and then I'll be able to attempt. Michael's always pushing me. He's like, just sing live. And I was like, I don't know about that streaming. But we'll try it. But we do pre-record the vocals, and then we lip sync to them. But it's our own voices. So, you know, very drag.
Yes,
very drag. All right. So we are wrapping up here, and we like to end on a dose of drama. which is, you know, maybe something going on in the world, a piece of pop culture that we're consuming, anything that's on our minds after this conversation. You know, whether you're feeling dramatic or not, we like to bring a dose of drama into the world for our listeners to enjoy. I'll start because there is something I'm feeling dramatic about. You know, I go on these walks in my neighborhood every day for like an hour. It's you know, it clears my head. It's wonderful. And in the neighborhood that I'm in my parents, you know, home, there's Trump signs abound. And so I've just gotten used to it. But, you know, I think it's actually helpful. I want you to put up your sign because then I know who is on my side and who isn't. You know what I mean?
Mark the houses.
You know where to not let your kids go trick-or-treating, you know?
And it's also fun because we have a Biden-Harris sign in our yard and people will walk by and they'll be like, I love your sign. You know, they'll whisper it to me like they're nervous in the neighborhood. And I'm like, yeah, great. But anyway, so I was on my walk the other day. And there was, you know, two cars pulled over and there were like three cop cars and there was like a minor, you know, car accident that happened. Like it literally looked like a bump, but it was two cars you could see. Not only were the five police officers there, you know, five for this little car accident. You can tell how like bored my neighborhood is.
It's a small town, Jackie.
Small town. Not a single one had a mask on. And to cap it all off, in the yard they were in front of, there were not one, not two, but three Trump 2020 signs. And I was just like, this is, you know, it's, and I was walking by wearing a, like, it was like a, you know, just like a t-shirt, but it had a, you know, like a pride flag on it. And I was like, you know, with my mask I had, and I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't feel nervous right now. And I don't, because I belong here too. But seeing things like that, where they're like not wearing masks, There's five police officers. I didn't feel safe in the moment. It was just this weird, like, there was these Trump signs. I was like, this is America though, and we all belong here. But I just felt so like conflicted and upset. And like, I was like, what can I do to like, I don't know. This is just, it sucks. It all sucks. I felt very like alone in the moment. It was just like so annoying and troubling. And I suppose motivating, you know, to like spread love and get out the vote.
I love that. Well, I don't love that that's how you felt, but I love that you were able to refocus your feelings into something positive.
Yeah, because I was like feeling so upset, and that's when I was walking home when I had the sign in our yard, and the neighbor came by and she was like, "I love your sign," and I was like, "You know what? It's all good. We're there for each other, and the good people will make themselves known." You know. All right, Dylan or Jackie, dose of drama.
I've been listening to a podcast, and this is something that I think, I'm assuming that the three of us are not parents. I shouldn't make that assumption. But
you assume correctly.
I wouldn't assume most people, but I would assume that a good chunk of your listening audience are also not parents, maybe yet or maybe ever. So I've been listening to a podcast called Nice White Parents. And I just finished the series, and it's through the same producers who I believe did the Serial podcast, but it's a very different podcast. It's about this one Brooklyn public high school and kind of the way in a primarily black and brown community, and the way that white parents have kind of affected that public school and the children and the other parents, non-white parents from that community over the past 50 or 60 years, through the way that the school was built based on the petitions of white parents, through the way that white parents have come in and out of the school and wanting to change it into something. And it's just very interesting because I've never really thought about this whole rat race of getting your kids into the public school that you want them to in New York, which is like this whole election, or I don't know, it's some kind of complicated system that they attempt to explain on this podcast, but I was like, this is a lot.
Yeah.
But just kind of the actual like way that, you know, from what I understand, and again, I'm not one, but being a parent really lets out your kind of most, I would say, animal instinct desires of like what you want for your child. And what you see is so many parents really fighting for their kids in like a very visceral and impactful way that really impacts everyone around them, because when you're fighting for your kid, you're really focused in on just your kid. And interesting the way that you know, being a white person of privilege affects the way that you move in that world. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting podcast. And I would say that it takes some twists and turns, and I would highly recommend it to anyone who, like me, has no idea what any of this is about. Yeah. It's like a whole other world that I didn't know existed, this like secret world of parents trying to get their kids into schools.
You know, you've convinced me to download it because I, as a Serial fan, they put like a preview in my feed, like, yeah. I'm still subscribed to Serial. And I think I remember the hook being that there was like, they needed to build a new school, and all the white parents were like, let's do it. Let's do it. We all want this school. This community deserves it. And then not a single white parent signed their kid up or wanted their kid to go to that school.
Not a single white parent in the 60s who petitioned for this school to be built and decided where it was going to be. Ended up sending their kid to the school.
And that's such a hook. And it's so prescient right now with everything that's been going on since in this post George Floyd America, with the way that we view our biases and have been going back to the 60s and before.
Yeah. And the way, like, what we'll say and petition like in public, and then what we decide in private to do with our own children, you know, not that we have children, but I think it's a good kind of, very physical example of like ways that, you know, you can be a performative ally versus actually making a choice and a difference for yourself and your life and how you move in the world. And it's something for us all, as people of some privilege, you know, we're all men, we're mostly white, you know what I mean? It's like to have that, check on yourself and be like, oh, have I ever done something where I said I was going to support something and then not done everything I could to really follow through on what I was saying. And I think it's really interesting it's an interesting listen.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to download it.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
I appreciate the suggestion. All right. So I'll do a quick dose of drama, and it's just that, it was just announced that we are not getting Black Widow this year of the Marvel Universe, and everything in this next phase of movies is going to get pushed back continuously. And this is the first year since 2009 that a new Marvel blockbuster has not come out, which is sad. But I think that it is sad. Yeah. This is like what I have to live for, like this content that comes out. And what's interesting too, we were talking about how the touring for U Season 12 Queens, and I guess for that matter, All Stars 5 Queens, didn't get to happen. But I think that there's going to be such an insatiable hunger for live entertainment when we're able to get back together. There will be huge tours. Black Widow is going to break records next May when it comes out, because everyone's going to be like, I've waited a year. It's finally coming out.
Black Widow and Widow Von Du, they're both going to be out there.
That's right.
Well, that's what it really came down to. Yes. Is 2020 only had room for one Widow, and it was Widow Von Du.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Widow. She might be. Oh, my God. Oh, there's just this. See, like I said, an iconic season. So many good things. Well, Jackie, listen, we are huge fans. We will always support. And we are so thankful that you took your morning to do this with us, because we've wanted you for a while now. And I'm glad that we finally had the time.
Thanks for having me. This was so much fun. So much drama. We really covered the gamut from Housewives to Marvel.
I know. There's really such a crossover.
We didn't even get into Star Trek, which I was hoping you could tell me about, but I guess next time you'll have to tell me where I should start with Star Trek.
Too much drama, but start with the second season of The Next Generation. Start there to kind of get into it. That's easiest entry point.
Well, thanks, Jackie. You're the best.
Mwah. Thank you, guys.
Everyone should follow Jackie at Jackie Cox NYC on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me at Dylan McDowell.
And me at Connor McDowell.
And of course, follow us at The Drama Podcast. We have all of our merch out now. I'm rocking our Plus Press Play t-shirt right now. Buy Jackie's merch, buy our merch. You'll be all set for fall in quarantine. And Connor, we'll see you next time.
Drama.